Thank you for coming to the KHNS Hainesboro Assembly Candidate Forum. I'm KHNS News Director Jillian Rogers, and this is reporter Emily Files. We're going to try to keep this to an hour, like I said, and we've got a lot of questions, some really great ones from you, the public, and also from Emily and myself that we came up with earlier. The three candidates, I'll introduce them. Margaret Friedenauer, Tresham Gregg, and Jerry Lapp are running for two open seats on the Borough Assembly. And candidates, we don't have a time limit, but we ask that you just be concise because we do have a lot to get through. We'd like to touch on as many issues as we can tonight. So, with that being said, let's get started. Let's start with the introductions. If we'll start with Margaret and go to Tresham, and then Jerry, introduce yourself and give us kind of a brief overview of your platform, why you're running for a borough assembly.
And we're recording this, right?
We are recording this. This is going to air tomorrow and Monday.
Okay. Well, hello. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Thanks for coming tonight. Why I want to run, I guess I'll just keep it simple. I hear a lot that my generation and younger aren't involved enough in local issues and politics. And so that's the main reason I kind of wanted to get involved is to kind of represent that generation of Haines, the growing population of Haines, young families, and just you know, the 50 and under, the 40 and under, whoever. I think we need more representation, but that means that we need to be involved. So I'm kind of walking the talk, I guess, there. I think my experiences working in this community has been as a journalist, and that has given me the skills to listen to all sides of an issue. I think in Haines, you don't always just have two sides. You have many sides of an issue. And I've come to really appreciate all the passion in this community. Sometimes that makes it hard to come to decisions among a really well-informed and involved community. But I think one of the things I carry with me is that I don't have any political ideology. So I think I can kind of be a unifier in that way. I listen to all sides and bring that to the table. My knowledge of local issues from reporting on them over the last 4 years. And those are the main reasons I want to run for Borough Assembly, to be involved. And that's the role I kind of want to take in being part of my community. So thanks.
I guess that's me. I'm Tresham Gregg, and I'm running for the Borough Assembly partly because, you know, I feel that we're at a crossroads in our future here as to which way we're going to go and what things are going to happen here and how we're going to feel about being here and being citizens of an expanding community. And I'm feeling that we need more enthusiasm on the part of everyone in the public here to both participate in government and also to participate in community affairs. I'd have to say that I'm somewhat guilty of not doing it as much as I should have in the past, but I feel like I'm more interested in it now. Certain things that have happened recently in the borough government and also in our town kind of makes me feel like we really need to step to the plate and make things happen. I'm from here. I grew up here, and I was went through the school system, but I was very fortunate to be one of the founding members of the Chilkat Dancers here, and really they were a fantastic experience for most of the young people that happened here over the decades, and it was really ended up being a very fantastic economic draw. It was really what brought the cruise ships into Haines, and a whole lot of other things that happened. So I would like to see more ways that we can enhance our interactions with the government, you know, and it's going to have to be kind of creative, I think, so that we all feel better about everything. And I think that, you know, whatever the government is doing should be have the public included in their information spreading and invitations to be part of the meetings and things like that. So that's mostly it. I'm interested in developing an economic thrust in our community that is enhancing who we are as artists, entrepreneurs, business people, hotel owners, tour guides, native people that are going for subsistence in their fine art culture and all these kinds of things. This is who we are, and this is where we can actually draw our best potential for future economic development.
Thank you, Tresham. Jerry?
Yeah, my name's Jerry Lapp. I've been here for 38 years. My wife and I have been in business. Well, we were in business for 33 years. We raised our family here. We think that Haines is a great place to live. And I've served on the assembly for 13 years, and I was mayor for 6 years. And I just think Haines is a great place for people to raise their families here. And part of the reason that I want to be on the family assembly is because I want to see people and young families be able to stay here. And I want to see them, that they can find employment here in Haines. I love that Haines is a small town. I was born and raised in a small town. And I like it to stay that way, a small town. But we need to be a healthy town, and a healthy town needs to have employment here. And so my time on the assembly, I've always worked towards, I've supported business opportunities that would bring things, bring jobs to town. I've supported our schools. We got a new school in that time. And I supported the library when I was mayor. I helped get that library, which was, I feel like that was an accomplishment. And we've done things like create subdivisions that brought money into the community, which helps fund a lot of the things that we do. And there's several projects that I'd like to keep working on, and that's why I decided to run for assembly. I took a year off because I wanted to see if I really wanted to do it again, and I do want to do it again. I think it's felt like I kind of lost something when I got out for a year. So there's a solid waste program that still needs to be followed through. I haven't seen any action on that in the last year, and I'd like to follow through on that so we have a solid waste program. And part of that would be putting transfer stations out the road and maybe out towards Mud Bay so that we don't find garbage all over the place. That would go a long ways in doing that. And another thing is the biomass project that we're just starting to get into. I think there could be jobs created out of that because I understand that it burns pellets and chips. And if we can utilize some of our state forests around here for creating chips for that, we can become more sustainable in our energy sources. And I'd also like to pursue more hydro projects in here. So these are things that I would like to see happen and that I would be working towards if I would get elected again. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to take back what I said, and there is going to be a two-minute time limit on answers, just so that we can get through all the questions, or most of them anyway. So when 2 minutes is coming on, I'm going to show you my little sign, and you can wrap it up. First question. How do you envision Haines, ideally, in 10 years? What industries or other economic changes do you see? Start with Tresham.
Well, I would like to see more special events happening here all the time. You know, I think that that's what really brings economy into Haines. I mean, we can look at the bike race and the state fair and the beer fest. These all bring in lots of customers into Haines, and they stay in our hotels and they eat in our restaurants and they shop in our shops and they buy the beer and whatever, you know. So that would be a good thing. I think it would be nice to see a lot more art, public art around this as an attraction. And I would like to see groups of people coming into Haines that are targeted groups that are coming here for reasons that we create. You know, maybe it's a healing arts festival, or you know, some kind of interesting programs that we do that combine outdoor adventure with arts and culture and conferences, things like that. I'd like to see us all be having a better time together, and participating, working together, and feeling good.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, could you repeat the question? I'm having a hard time hearing that there.
Absolutely. How do you envision Haines ideally in 10 years? What industries and other economic changes do you see?
The 10-year outlook for Haines?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess it. We would be... I can see it's seasonal work is what we're at now. And I would like to see more winter work, I guess, or a year-round steady employer here in the valley that would bring some economic relief to us. Because the wintertime here, people are really struggling. I don't know if you look around, if you're here during the wintertime, you'll see that people are struggling during the wintertime. We have great summers. We got the tourists coming in, the tourist ships and stuff. But we need to fill something in that wintertime. And maybe more, now that we've got another motel in town, maybe we can have more conventions. And that would help fill some of that. But I guess basically what I'd like to see is a full-time employment. Like we used to have the sawmill. And I can't put my finger on exactly what it would be, but... we need something that's year-round and not just part-time. We've got, 48% of our workforce is year-round, but that's government and school jobs. And we need to kind of fill the gap and find something else at that time. But conventions would help. Special events would help. Just things like that that are going to help fill in that void.
Okay, thank you. Margaret, would you like me to repeat the question?
Sure.
How do you envision Haines ideally in 10 years? What industries and other economic changes do you see?
Okay, so today, I just found the study today that came out for Southeast Conference. It's Southeast by the Numbers that Southeast Conference puts out. And looking at that kind of changed, it didn't really change my thought on this already, but it kind of reaffirmed. And it looked back at the last 5 years of growth in Southeast. And it's kind of the things that we already have. It's the jobs we already have that we need to make sure we keep and nurture. And, you know, there wasn't a steady increase in growth in jobs in the last 5 years across Southeast, but fishing and tourism were the most steady ones. And that's what we have here. Those are the two biggest employers already in Haines. And I think to make sure that we nurture those and keep those going and sustainable. You know, I'm not sure that a small town like Haines can survive a boom-bust type industry. And so we need a sustainable economy over the long haul. And I think that fishing and tourism and in some ways resource development have panned out to show that those are the most steady for Haines already. I like what, you know, Tresham has some great ideas that Jerry also echoed about our arts, and those that might be an untapped resource that we could definitely develop. I like those ideas for sure. That could definitely be over the long term. You know, there is the one thing that's going to be prevailing is there's going to be less government funding and less government jobs. And so we really need to find sustainable ways of maintaining the economy we already have, hopefully grow it. But with the industries we already have, we really need to protect those and nurture those. And that's in 10 years, I hope fishing and tourism are still the biggest employers in town.
Thank you. Okay, the next question, we'll start with Jerry. Do you support an expanded cruise ship industry in Haines? That's part A of that question. B is, what restrictions, if any, should there be put in place when it comes to wastewater dumping in the harbor from the cruise ships?
Well, I think we could expand the cruise ship, the ships that come in. I looked at a survey, and actually that was one of the things, and that survey was in 2011, and that was one of the things that people were saying on that survey that we should do is try to get more cruise ships in. But I really wouldn't want to see us get as many as Skagway gets in. That would be too much, I feel, for Hayne. And as far as the wastewater treatment, I don't think that they should dump it here in the harbors. I would be opposed to that. I know they're under strict guidelines and that they're allowed to do it now, but that would be something that I would think that we shouldn't allow them to do here in the harbors.
Tresham, would you like me to repeat the question?
Okay.
Do you support an expanded cruise ship industry in Hayne's? What restrictions, if any, should be put in place when it comes to wastewater dumping in the harbor?
Well, of course, cruise ships coming into Hayne's traditionally has been a great thing for the economy. And, this has to be a delicate balance between the amount of cruise ships and our infrastructure and ability to deal with it. It's a big deal to have, a bunch of cruise ships coming in all the time, or at least, three or four or five a week. But, I know that the tour companies say that they need several cruise ships a week just in order to pay, have the help be full-time and working all the time. And, it certainly is going to bring a lot of sales receipts for the borough. But, there is a point where it gets overrun a little bit by the cruise ship passengers. And I think that, it's not something that you should necessarily bank on forever. I've seen cruise companies come and go here over the years many times. It'd be nice to have a different kind of tourism development that made, I mentioned it before, we're actually bringing in groups of people that are targeted to come here to do targeted things. And that way they spend more money all around town over a longer period of time. As far as the dumping, that's kind of a no-brainer. No, we don't want them dumping the water right here at the dock.
Thank you. Margaret, do you support an expanded cruise ship industry in Hayne's? What restrictions, if any, should be put in place when it comes to wastewater dumping in the harbor?
Expanded. I don't know. I guess, tour operators and the tourism industry could speak better to this about what our limit is right now. I don't think we should give it away. We shouldn't give our community away, and I kind of feel like maybe we did that with waiving the docking fee. I think cruise ships are going to come here because of what we already have. But that being said, they do. We have one dock. We have a beautiful new dock that I think we need to utilize, but it is only one dock. I think we also benefit greatly from Skagway's industry, of course, with them coming over as day visitors, which is wonderful. So as far as what we can hold, I think we really have to, as a community, look at capacity, especially when you're looking at tours, with what's going out in Chilkoot or wherever. I think there's probably more capacity. I think the tour operators would say that. But I think we just need to market ourselves for what we are and not try to market ourselves for promising more than we have or giving away revenues that we could generate by having cruise ships here, like docking fees. I also think the small ships are a really great benefit. That brings in less influx, but sometimes they're bigger spenders, right? So a smaller amount of people, but bigger spenders, you raise the tax, I think that's a really good strategy that our tourism department has worked on, is getting more of the small specialty ships. And also, we can't ignore the independent travelers when it comes to Hayne's and our area, especially since we're on the road system and the ferry system. We need to also pay attention to the independent travelers as well as those that come on tours. So kind of a balance, I guess. I don't know if that really answered it all. The wastewater, no. I know they can do it now. That was, overturned by the state administration from a citizen referendum that voted that, we should have had those restrictions in place. So those restrictions should have stayed in place because that was voted on by voters, not by the administration. But I don't know right now where it stands or how to overturn something like that. So it's unfortunate.
Thank you. Okay. Next question, we'll start with Margaret. How can public input in the Hainesboro decision-making process be improved? And if you could give an example of when public input has worked in the assembly process or when it has not. I know these are all two-parters. I'm sorry.
I know. I'm like, wait, go back. Gosh, I'm thinking of the one that I just thought of that worked. But first of all, how it can be improved?
How can it be improved? Yeah, public input.
Okay. It's really making people feel welcome. And I think that goes for the basic assembly as well. I'm not trying to put down anyone currently on the assembly or anybody on the assembly right now or administration. I'm not really going to address that. I think there are ways of making the public feel more welcome. However, I also think that the committee process is underutilized, and I think at the committee level where it's much more relaxed and you can have back and forth, you don't necessarily have to follow Robert's rules, and I've seen committees do a great job of this, of being there but interacting, making people feel comfortable with talking, and there's no time limit, there's questions. I think that's a really great forum. I understand the assembly meetings need to stay somewhat formal, but there are ways of making people feel more comfortable, and it just comes from listening, actively listening to them, and encouraging the public involvement. I do think the attempt to have more town hall meetings is a great idea. I'm not sure we've achieved a level of them that people feel comfortable going to and participating in. And to always let people know that if they're not comfortable speaking in public, that whenever you write into the assembly or the administration, that your letters and your words get to them, and reassuring them that that's also a form of public involvement and that those things are considered. And you want an example of when it did work or didn't work?
Either or.
Well, I think the one way it did work was when had all these meetings, talking about the property tax exemptions for nonprofits. It went in front of the assembly very quickly, but then people like Jessica Edwards helped. She came forward and expressed a lot of concern about it, and they sent it back to committee, and they worked one-on-one with nonprofits for a long time in committee, which is what I was talking about. And when it did come to the assembly, there was a lot of good consensus on the pieces that they had, and it passed the assembly easily without conflict, because all of that was taken care of the assembly level. And if I have time, I think one place it didn't work was when the rate increase was proposed by AP&T. And I think that the public was shut out of that process a little bit because the lawyers suggested that a bunch of that discussion had to take place in executive session. I didn't agree with that. I don't think lawyers are ever absolute or correct, and I think the public should have been let in to that process more.
Thank you. Tresham, how can public input in the Hainesboro decision-making process be improved? Give an example of when public input has worked, or when it hasn't, or when it hasn't.
Margaret's a hard act to follow on this one. You said all the right things. I think that we need to be more respectful of everybody's presentations at the meetings, and maybe less of a distinction between the people that are up there in the big chairs and the people that are out there in the little chairs, you know, so that we're all feeling as though we belong there, and that we were wanted to be there, and that whatever we're going to say is going to be respected, and maybe even dealt with. Why not? If somebody has something to say and it isn't getting worked out right at that point, be able to go into an assembly member to come back to him and talk it over and see where it's going, and maybe something will come of it. I don't know. But, I think more work sessions and town hall meetings. We've had a couple of sort of impromptu citizen town hall meetings here that worked very well. And Joe Parnell did one, and actually I did one on Monday night where we were able to come to the podium and speak our minds, and then people would ask questions or say something in response, and the conversation went around and around, and it was all really very informative and very wonderful. Everybody felt really good, But like I said, I mean, Margaret really has got a line on all these things from having been at all these meetings herself. I've been quite a few meetings recently, so I understand what is going on and how things have been done. And so it's been a very interesting, eye-opening experience. And, you know, I, as far as one of the things that didn't work, I thought, was when about the harbor issue citizens actually put together a petition that said, hey, you know, all we really want to do is to be informed and have a town hall meeting and discuss this thing and understand what the real financial picture is going to be. But we were really stonewalled over and over again, and I don't think it was really a great thing for the borough to have done that, really, because, you know, you kind of keep, it just keeps festering until it gets resolved.
Thank you. Jerry, how can public input in the Haynesboro decision-making process be improved? Give an example of when public input has worked or when it has not.
Well, I guess having been there, I see that there is all kinds of avenues for public input. You've got the internet. You can contact all of your assembly members. You can do it the old-fashioned way and pick up the telephone and call them, which I know on a lot of issues, and we've, in 19 years, there have been a lot of hot issues. And I know that when you start getting a lot of phone calls or emails on any issue, that you look at that and you really consider that whenever you're making a decision, and you're taking a lot of public input in there. And you say, people are really passionate about this. At least this is my way of thinking. And so on anything, you could change your mind sitting there on the assembly. And it's a lot of it's how much input that you get out of it. And then you take what the facts are, and you put the two together and say, okay, this is what we're going to have to do. But I think that at the public meetings, when a lot of people show up over an issue, the assembly members, or at least myself, are listening to what the people have to say. You listen to a point. When it starts getting the same old thing over and over and over again, then, you know, you'd like to say, okay, let us get on with our business. But you listen to when people show up. And now the borough has a website where you can voice your concerns. And just letters to the assembly, I mean, these things are ways that people can voice their concerns, and if you've got good assembly members, they will listen to those concerns. And another thing is town hall meetings. I wouldn't be opposed at all to more town hall meetings where you get a lot of people speaking up, especially on subjects that are a concern to the whole community. And I guess over the years, I mean, that's what I feel that, you know, that you're listening. That's the good part. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I've sat in a meeting where people did start to get, I guess, a little frustrated, and they started calling the assembly names and stuff and scoffing at the remarks and stuff. Well, that doesn't sit well with elected officials when people sit out there and do that. So that's when it doesn't work.
So. Thank you. Okay, so this one is for Tresham. If elected, what actions would you take or recommend on the small boat harbor expansion project?
Oh, boy. Well, I would recommend that we step back and take a second look at it, especially concerning the financial picture and, you know, the need for certain things like a two-ramp sports fishing thing, ramp that requires so much parking and so much wave barrier. You know, I mean, I think we really need to be looking at everything that we do in the community as an attraction. So what is it about the harbor that would make it an attraction for everybody that comes to Haines and wants to come to Haines, you know? I fail to see how a big steel wall and a huge flat parking lot is much of an attraction. So what can we do to transform that into an attraction? We want to have a working harbor, yes. It's a shame that we can't have a rubble breakwater, and I'm not totally convinced that that's really the case, but, you know, perhaps. And so I think if we took Lookout Park and made it into the basis of the attraction, taking the trail all the way down to the beach towards the Port Choku Dock and stud it with outdoor sculptures and totem poles and made the park a usable thing, and then you're not really totally taken over by a huge parking lot. And if we didn't have to have all that much parking lot on the beach, I think it would be a great thing.
Thank you. Margaret, if elected, what actions would you take or recommend on the small boat harbor expansion plan?
Well, this one's tough. I'm not sure if by the time any of us are elected, what actions are available to the assembly, depending on what happens next Tuesday. That's the first thing. Secondly, this is a tough one, I guess, because personally, I support the project as is, as a harbor user. But I've had to check myself a little bit because it's kind of a test of how much am I willing to listen to other ideas as opposed to what I personally want. So it's been an interesting conversation. Tresham and I have talked about it a lot. I don't know what I would propose. Personally, I think the project as is good. I've seen it work through the process the last 2 years, and I support the conclusions that the engineers have come to, that the Ports and Harbor Committee have come to, because they have backed most of those decisions up, as far as I can tell. However, there are enough people concerned in the community that we can't end the discussion, I don't think. And I think that's the compromise we need to come to. I don't think anybody on any side should be digging in their heels at this time, because it's causing a lot of discord and a lot of controversy and a lot of unnecessary, almost heartache for some people. I see some people get so passionate about this one subject. And I feel myself getting passionate about it, too. I want to stay here, and fishing is my main source of income for my family. And I can tell you that harbor expansion would really help my decision to stay in this community rather than go to Petersburg or Ketchikan or a harbor that has better facilities. However, I'm willing to compromise. And I guess it's hard for me to answer that question because I don't know what avenues are really available right now or past Tuesday. If there are avenues available to make changes to the plan when two of us are elected, I guess the best I can say is I'm open to the discussion of looking at that. I would personally be somewhat disappointed, but I think personally it would also be a challenge to make sure that we are getting as close to a consensus in this community on that project as possible. And that would mean me compromising on some of my beliefs and what I believe about that project as well. So,
thank you. Jerry, if elected, what actions would you take or recommend on the small boat harbor expansion plan?
What action would I take? I would want to keep moving it forward. I know this has been going on. I think when I was mayor, I went to D.C. to talk to the Corps of Engineers and to talk to our congressman to get this on the list so that we would get funded for it. And every time that we keep delaying something, it costs money. If we delay the harbor for another year, it's going to cost another $1 million. If we keep delaying it, and I think the engineer planned, I mean, there were a lot of meetings over the years. There was over 40 meetings to discuss this harbor projects, and the engineers come and did a presentation, and the assembly voted on it to keep moving it forward. And I think with the engineers' plans now that you could make small changes to it, but I think that we should keep moving forward on it as it is now.
Thank you. We had a lot of questions from residents about the minor offenses ordinance. So, this was the latest one. Why do we need the minor offenses ordinance? Let's start with Margaret.
Yes. This was a fun question at the chamber forum last week, so that's why I'm like, sure. If you want to just answer that specific question, the reason we need it is because the state Supreme Court has said the communities need to develop these minor offenses ordinances. Whether or not you agree with the argument that the state Supreme Court put forward as to why we need these, that's a whole nother ballgame. That, I mean, if we want to go into a legal dispute with the state Supreme Court, that's one separate subject over here, right? That's why we, quote unquote, need it. Do we need it in the form it's in now, I think, is the better question. And obviously, like the harbor, we have a lot of conversation going on about whether we need, 250 or some minor offenses that, yes, they're already on the books, but do we need to codify them in the way that they're proposing to be codified? And so I think the question is, what can we do about this to, again, try to bring about more consensus? And again, I think the answer is committee. I don't think it's spent enough time in committee. I don't think we've looked closely enough at what other communities have done. On paper, this looks like really simple ordinance that communities should just go ahead, draft, and pass. In our community, again, we have very informed and involved citizens who say, hold on, maybe we don't have to do it this way just because that's what the court says. And I respect that, right? But that means it's going to take more time and more diligence and more work on everybody's behalf to come to a civil conclusion about how to solve this. I think Skagway did it very well. They spent a lot of time in committee on each piece. It took them a year, but they did it. And maybe that's one way that we could look at doing it. But I think it needs more time in committee, obviously. Otherwise, I think there's a full page ad in the Chilkat Valley News today just about why we shouldn't pass it the way it is. That's a lot of conversation that we need to be still having then. So,
thank you. Jerry, why do we need the minor offenses ordinance?
Yeah, I guess I don't know that we need it, but if it is mandated by the states, by the courts, then we should try to comply in some fashion. And myself, just looking at the ordinance, my own personal opinion is it should have been split in different sections. And I think it'd be a whole lot easier to understand. But when a lot of folks see all of those rules and regulations that are there, it's just pretty scary to think that, wow, this is all these rules and regulations pertain to us here in Haines. And so I think the combination of, okay, we got to make this change, and looking at the other is just something that just has a lot of people upset. And I do believe that it should go back to committee. There's some wording in there that needs to change. People don't want to feel that they're guilty until proven innocent, because that's not the way that this country was founded on. You're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. And so just some language like that and some other things in there that need change. So I would recommend that go back to committee for a little bit.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tresham.
How about a public debate? I mean, committees, you know, they can throw things under the table and mush over this and look over that, but mainly, what is it that we're trying to do here in our community? Are we trying to make everybody feel bad? Are we trying to extort money at every hand? Or are we here to make each other feel good and have a good time here in Haines? So if we have to have some ordinances, let's make them as user-friendly as we possibly can. And the fines, well, that should be minimal if possible. When I was at a committee meeting here the other day, when it was the Government Services Committee, and the first one they talked about was fining people $100 if they didn't have their numbers on their house. Well, I said, Really? I mean, why not just give them the numbers and or put them up yourself and say it'll be fine if you take the numbers off? But, you know, I mean, really, it's kind of like we're trying to install some kind of a Gestapo state here. And we don't want that. We want to feel good and friendly with each other. We don't want to be looking over our shoulders. Somebody going to bust me if I jaywalk in front of houses. You know what I mean? Come on.
Thank you.
Can I just add one thing?
Yes.
And I was going to use this quote because Ronald Reagan said it. And he said, the first duty of government is to protect the people, not to run their lives. So that's just something that stuck in my head when I seen all these rules and regulations in this here.
So I think there's a fine balance between public input and decision makers, you know, making decisions. Define transparent government for me. We'll start with Tresham. What does that mean to you?
Well, I guess it means that when there's any issue that concerns the overall public, that they should be immediately informed and invited to come. You know, not just that we posted the meeting on the bulletin board at the borough, and if you didn't see it, tough luck. You know, I mean, really, we need to get the word out. Maybe we should have some blogs or, regular meeting formats where the people can come together and, you know, like I said, how about a debate or a town hall meeting or work sessions on whatever. Let's take the comprehensive plan and take a good look at each part of the comprehensive plan, kick it around. What does it mean? Who's going to do this? What's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? You know, even if it doesn't go anywhere in the borough, at least the community is involved and aware, and if they do speak and write letters or do whatever, then they should be noted for that and somehow dealt with so that their ideas are appreciated.
Thank you. Jerry, what does transparent government mean to you?
Transparent government means a government that where your actions are out in the public. And one thing that I've learned over the years is you try not to have executive session. That's one thing I do not like. I know there are times when you have to have them, but there are some times that I think you could get along without those executive sessions. And I know I tried when I was mayor to keep out of executive sessions because then people think that you're doing things behind closed doors. And I don't like that myself. And sometimes, though, there's too much transparency. If you put out too much information out there, people can get confused by it too. But it's you want everything. You want all your actions out there. You want to do it in front of the public. So people don't think that you're doing things behind closed doors. And to me, I think our government is very transparent. And all the things, I mean, you can find out just about anything on the borough website. So I just want to keep things out in the open.
Thank you. Margaret.
Can you repeat it?
What does transparent government mean to you?
Oh, I love this question because as a former journalist, this was one of my big things. And I'm going to be really nerdy and quote the charter because I have part of it written down about that. And it says the right to access a well-maintained public record for all actions of public officials so that citizens may retain control over affairs of the government. And I think that that guides us in what transparency should mean for the Haines Borough. I don't think democracy or this form of government is efficient, and I don't think it's meant to be. And I think it takes a lot of patience by government officials. And so, but speaking as a former journalist, the way that we always viewed it is Everything is considered public unless it falls under an exemption. Under Borough Code or State Open Records Act, Open Meetings Act, everything is considered public because it pertains to the people. No government official owns their action, has a public official, or owns their the information. It belongs to the public unless it falls under a certain exemption. So I think that sometimes it makes things tedious and difficult, especially for elected officials, and I really applaud elected officials for doing what they do, because it does take a lot of patience. But as a former journalist, that's something I would expect, to have my feet held to the fire about transparency, because it's paramount to making the public feel involved and as part of the government.
Thank you. Jerry, this one's for you to start.
For me.
Can the Chilkoot River support both mining and fisheries? And if not, what is the highest priority between the two?
Is that Chilkat or Chilkoot?
Chilkat, sorry.
Okay. This one's for me?
To start, yep.
Okay. I believe that they can coexist. I think it's been proven. You've got Greens Creek, and you've got the Red Dog. In fact, the Red Dog, where the Red Dog's at, there's a creek that run through there that there were no fish in. And now it's one of the top spawning areas in that area. But having said that, you want responsible mining. You don't want the mining that they used to do. Here in the Chilkat, they've been mining on the Porcupine and up Glacier Creek there for over 100 years. They've been plaster mining. And so far, I guess you can't say that it's hurt anything. There's no scientific evidence of that. But fishing is our top priority here. This is a fishing community. And if someone did want to come in and put a mine in, they would have to prove to me that they can do it without harming those fish. And that would be my take on that.
Thank you, Jerry. Tresham, can the Chilkat River support both mining and fisheries? And if not, what is the highest priority?
Well, not real sure, you know. I'm not really a miner, or I'm not particularly up on it. But, you know, I mean, if I look around at the rest of the world and see what happens with mines, you know, it's not a sure thing. It doesn't happen on a particular timeline. And, you know, the tailings or the chemicals and stuff that are stored at the site to create these ore deposits or loads or whatever have a questionable impact on the fisheries, because I mean they could drain down into the watershed and harm the fish that way, or a truck could overturn on its way down the highway to the ore dock, wherever that happens to be, and certainly that's not going to help the fishing industry any, or our subsistence way of life. So, I would seriously question both the desirability of having that happen, and even the need for it. I mean, really, it isn't who we are or what we want to do exactly. Maybe a few of us do, but you know, if I had a choice of eating fish or minerals, probably choose the fish.
Thank you. Margaret, can the Chilkat River support both mining and fisheries? And if not, what is the highest priority?
Well, I think the comprehensive plan says fishing is, and sustaining the fisheries on the Chilkat when it has to do with mining. But it also says responsible resource development. So, but it highlights fishing, right? So you have to really, I guess I don't know the answer to that, which is more important. I would say, since fisheries is already an established industry here for so long and supplies so many jobs and income, that we'd have to put fisheries first, because it's the known And we have to protect the jobs and the industries we already have. And I think the whole thing is an unknown. I mean, Jerry pointed out, though, that placer mining has been going on for ages. But the type of mining that we're talking about, right, with Constantine Exploration, that type of mining hasn't on the Chilkat. So I think that's the thing that really needs to be considered. I don't think there's an answer yet. And, I mean, to be really wild and crazy, you know, I've been looking at Juneau's mining ordinances. We don't have any local ordinances that talk about mining anywhere in our borough. And I think it's a little unusual. When we talk about Greens Creek and Kensington, I mean, those are two mines that actually employ a lot of local people, but they were developed and they operate successfully with local ordinances. And that gives people, local residents, a say in the industry going on in their borough. And I think maybe that would be something to really consider. That's a way to address local concerns about a new industry. And it seems like Juneau has done it very successfully with those ordinances, and that would just be a great way, I think, of starting a discussion, A, about this. I don't think there's been enough discussion about this. And B, to look at what the community does value the most. That may be a process, whether or not this community would ever pass similar ordinances. I'm not sure what that answer is. But a process like that would get the community talking about it. And I think that's a question that the community needs to answer, not just a single assembly candidate. And we need to know what the community as a whole thinks about that.
Thank you. Okay, let's get personal.
Oh, goody.
How, if at all, will your current affiliations with tourism, mining, and conservation, respectively, affect your decision-making process? Tresham, we'll start with you.
Don't put me on the spot, huh? Well, I am interested in developing tourism more and in different ways, and I think I've alluded to that several times tonight and in the past. You know, I think that we can do a great many things here in the community to enhance both tourism and our way of life at the same time, and enhance reasons why we like to be here. And so that's why I like tourism a lot, is because you know, it doesn't really impact our infrastructure terribly, and it brings money into the town that theoretically can go around several times before it gets evaporated out the door. It's a fun thing that we can do, you know. So, and it's things that we can do, which is different than waiting for somebody else to come in and do what they know how to do. But I think we need to develop our infrastructure on ways to make all these things come to fruition. I don't know, is there another part of the question that I didn't answer?
No. Let's see. Jerry.
Yes.
How, if at all, will your current affiliation with mining, in your case, respectively, affect your decision-making process on the assembly?
Okay, run that by me again. I didn't catch you on that.
How will your affiliation to mining, how will that affect your decision-making process on the assembly?
Oh, my affiliation, mining? It's a part-time job, and it's not mining that they're doing out there. It's exploration. So there's a difference between mining and exploration. And it's a part-time job. At any time, they could say, no, it's not worth it. So I don't see that as really a, you know, it would have any effect on my voting on it. If I was working for a company that was mining and something came up about it, I would excuse myself. I would declare a conflict of interest.
Okay, thank you. Margaret, how, if at all, will your current affiliation to conservation affect your decision-making process on the assembly?
Okay, so I work for Southeast Alaska Conservation Council now and have for like 3 months. and I know that this community has, some people in this community have a long history with SEAC. You know, I'm relatively new to the community, been here 4 years, so I know I can't fully appreciate some of the things that this community has dealt with in regards to SEAC, either pro or con or whatever, in the last 40 years. However, I took a job with SEAC because of what they stand for now. I mean, they currently work to advocate for clean water, healthy fisheries, and small-scale local timber producers. And those are things, in general, I can get behind. So it was a job that let me stay in Haines, which was my primary focus when I went looking for a job. I didn't seek out SEAC specifically, and they sought me out for my communication skills. So that's basically it. I think everybody, and especially in this size town, if you want to call it baggage, everyone has baggage. Everyone has affiliations with something or other, or this or that. And Jerry's right. You can always claim a conflict. And I think I've seen the assembly members currently and in the past couple years be very aware of that. And they claim it themselves, and then the rest of the assembly says, no, you don't. But I've seen them talk pretty openly about conflict of interest when it comes up. And if it comes up, it comes up. But it's my job. It's not my everything. So,
thank you. Okay. This one is for Margaret. Do you support the borough developing a local noise ordinance? If so, or if not, why?
Oh. I wasn't thinking of that one. That's one I didn't even think of. I guess that would have to be in response to the noise study, which is one reason maybe the borough went through the noise study. Even I'm not sure I agree that the borough did the noise study after everything that happened. I do think it, you know, it's so subjective. I know we measured noise, but we have nothing to compare it to now that we spent all that money on a study. And I think I'm not sure what we're going to use the study for. And that's concerning that we spent the money on it without having a clear idea of what we're going to use it for. Are we going to use it to talk about noise ordinances? Well, I'm not sure we needed it because everybody's going to have a different opinion. And noise can be a lot of things. In this case, we're probably talking about helicopters. But, you know, I've heard Scott Sundberg stand up at meetings, and I totally agree with him. He lives way out, you know, at the point out by Letnikoff, and he gets waken up in the mornings by the diesel engines of the boats going by at 4:30. That's noise to him, and I appreciate that. That makes sense when he said that at a couple meetings. I was like, you're right. Noise is subjective. So how do we develop a local noise ordinance? I have no idea. Again, that sounds like a lot of work. It would be a lot of public input on that one. And I can't say whether I agree we should do it or not. Do I think it would resolve some conflicts? Perhaps, but it's not going to change your opinion of what's noisy and what's not, and what's intrusive and what's not. If the community could come together and talk about noise and decide what we want as a community, perhaps. But that's a big question that I'm not sure I can figure out right now, but whether that would be good or bad for the community. I think we're going to keep talking about it if we don't have a noise ordinance. If we have a noise ordinance, maybe it would help. But that's about the only thing I can come up with on that right now.
Thank you. Tresham, do you support the borough developing a noise ordinance? If so, or if not, why?
You know what? I don't really have an opinion on it.
Okay. Thank you. Jerry?
I don't know. We've got some, I guess, there are suggestions in code about noise within the town site. And I guess if we did a noise study, are we going to outlaw airplanes that fly over low so that we don't have that transportation coming in and out? And I know since living here in town, I know out the road sometimes you'll get a little more noise and stuff. But I've just noticed here in town there that, okay, I had a neighbor that every morning at 5 o'clock he'd start up his generator because he didn't want to be on the power grid. And so, I mean, a noise study, I guess we had the noise study, but an ordinance, we do need something there. Because if we had 1,000 people starting up generators every morning here in town at 5 o'clock, that'd get pretty noisy around here. So I would support an ordinance that would have some, I guess, some kind of limitations on noise, but I don't know, it'd have to be looked at, and you'd want a lot of public input on it to see what the folks want.
Okay, and I think just we're running out of time here, so this might be our last question. Where is funding for nonprofits on your list of priorities? And we'll start with Jerry.
Where is what?
Funding for nonprofits on your list of priorities.
You know, that's kind of a tough one, because over the years the borough has been fairly generous with nonprofits. And lately the revenues aren't there. And they're kind of the last one when you go through the budget session, the last ones that, okay, if there's anything left, then we'll go ahead and fund them. And I think they're still doing that, except that amount's gone down. So there's not as much funding there. You know, you would like to see all the nonprofits funded to the fullest. But if you're going to keep your essential services, I mean, somewhere there you're going to have to start cutting out some costs. And like, okay, last year the operating costs were $600,000, I think, over what the revenues were within the borough. That's area-wide and the town side. So you take that out of reserve, and I know the borough's got a healthy reserve, but if you keep taking out of that reserve, pretty soon you're not going to have that reserve. And to me, the reserve should be not used for operating costs, but for special projects, if you have special projects. So, like I said, if we had a good economy here, if we had the dollars coming in, I would say, yeah, let's fund them to the fullest. But if you can't, at least try to give them something.
Thank you. Tresham.
Thank you. I think we have an amazing collection of nonprofits in this community, and they should definitely be encouraged. And of course, what you know, Jerry brought up the concept that, well, we don't have enough funding for them. Well, that's because we don't have enough sales revenues coming in to do it. And but who better than the nonprofits to create avenues for additional revenue coming into the town? I mean, these people can do interesting projects. They can dream up interesting projects. They can find extra funding. They can do it for cheap. They have volunteers. They are the engines of our community, and they could cooperate better together and make bigger projects happen. If we want to have special events coming into town, like festivals and things like that, well, we would be looking directly at the nonprofits to do that. And that's where the money's going to come from. So one way or another, we should find that money. I mean, how much did we spend on studies this year? I mean, it was $200,000. That could go a long way to helping create new economic engines in our community through our nonprofits. So, and you know, maybe we could take a little bit of the interest on the permanent fund if we had projects that were slated to actually create jobs and more economic revenue coming into the community, and that money would come back to us in sales tax and in spending inside the community over and over again. So I think we just have to look at it in terms of, you know, what is it that we really want to do, and who are we, and what do we want, you know, how do we do it? So I think we need creative ideas for making all these things work.
Thank you. Margaret, where is funding for nonprofits on your list of priorities?
Well, I guess to just straight answer the question, it would have to be after funding essential services in the budget. But on a broader view, I mean, I agree with what a lot of Tresham said, is that the nonprofits in this community are a huge economic driver. They're even a huge employer in some ways, because we have so many nonprofits. And I remember the former mayor, Stephanie Scott, talking a lot about how the nonprofits in this community provide services that the borough doesn't or can't. And we need to look at what services we would lose if we would lose some of those nonprofits, like the senior services, a lot of the senior services, and care for some of the people that we really need to make sure that we take care of in this community. However, you know, the borough is mandated to fund essential services. So maybe it's not coming from direct funding where we show support on the borough level for these. I think something like what we did with what the borough did with the nonprofit property tax exemptions, securing those for the nonprofits, sales tax exemptions for the nonprofits. We are giving up revenue if we do that. However, we're not spending the money, so we're offering a support maybe in a different way, offering some of the services of the borough, like the tourism department, to help some of the nonprofits maybe publicize events or conferences and things like that. I think there's creative ways you could offer borough support to some of the nonprofits, since we are since we may not have the funding, direct funding necessary to even fund essential services right now. So I guess that's where the priority would lie, under essential services, but the willingness to look at alternative ways of supporting the nonprofits in this town that really, in a way, provides sort of essential services to at least some people in our community.
Thank you. We are out of time, over time, actually. So if you would like to speak for a minute, just a closing statement, perhaps, and we'll start with Jerry.
I would just like to tell everyone to be sure to get out and vote. And I just wrote something. I had a thought the other day. Sometimes I get those. To some people, it's about politics. To me, it's about community. It's about doing things that are going to make our community a better place to raise a family. It's about safety of our families, and it's about neighbors helping each other out in times of need. We need to stop thinking so much of what do I want to what does our community need, to be a place where people who have very different lifestyles can come together and make Haines a healthy and sustainable community.
Thank you. Margaret?
All right. Well, thank you for coming. yes, and don't forget to vote. And the voting is now here this year, not at the Bald Eagle Foundation, just so you know, in case you didn't get your little card in the mail. I guess I would just reiterate kind of what I said at the beginning. I chose to run because it's one way I can be involved. It's how I like to be involved in the community. There's lots of people in this town who are entrepreneurs, who are raising families, who are working at nonprofits and doing great things. And this is sort of the way I know how to be involved, take the knowledge that I have from the last several years. And I completely respect people who grew up here and have lived here a lot longer than I have, and I appreciate that. People like my husband, who reminds me what everybody's names are sometimes. But with respect to that, I also think I can bring some creativity and some new ideas by not being a longtime person here and adding some diversity and depth to the assembly, using my experiences that I have and my generational experience and things like that. And I do appreciate what Jerry said, too. I'm glad that this is not a partisan election. I don't believe that a community this small we can have partisan elections or that we can get by just on our own personal political ideology. I think you have to set that aside, and that's something I feel like I do well. I feel like I listen well to all sides, and I think that's important, and that's what I bring to the table. So thank you.
Thank you. Tresham?
Well, it's one of Haines' greatest strengths that we have so many talented, experienced people in the community that have so much to offer. I would do everything in my power to ensure that we do a better job of considering ideas, opinions, and suggestions of our committees and the public before we make decisions. We need to do a much better job of including more people in solving the problems that we have today and helping us avoid creating more problems to solve in the future. We can generate more revenue without creating rules that impose fines on our neighbors and require staff time to administer. Annual events bring tremendous amounts of money into town that get spent in stores, hotels, restaurants, and generate taxes to run the administration. And we have a world-class theater right here. then we should be getting something going like ACFest again or something similar, and have a week-long theater event that will bring participants and patrons here from all over the state. Maybe a musical competition. Let's talk to people who host such events in other places and find out how we can do that in Haines. Our natural beauty and facilities, public facilities, are incredible assets, and we need to figure out how to employ them to our benefit and not try to get rid of them because we can't afford them. And we all want our kids to stay here, to come back to live here after they go to college. The kids don't want factory jobs today. They want to be entrepreneurs, and they want jobs that have potential for growth if they are clever and work hard. So, there's a lot of things that we can do, and I like to be part of that. And so I have a good ear for listening and hopefully creative ideas for helping make those decisions come alive.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the candidates for joining us tonight. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming. Election day is Tuesday, October 6th, and as Margaret mentioned, the town site polling location is right here at the Chilcat Center. Have a good evening. Thank you.